You're listening to WNHHLP 103.5 FM, New Haven's home for community radio. I'm Mubaraka Ibrahim, and this is Mornings with Mubaraka. We are broadcasting live from downtown New Haven, streaming live on TuneIn Radio and newhavenindependent.org. We're also streaming live on Facebook. You can find us on the New Haven Independent Facebook page, as well as the Fit Muslima Facebook page. We have a show today around some really important things that are going on for Muslims. So, you know, here on Mornings with Mubaraka, we talk about national issues from a local level through a lens of diversity. And today we are talking about a very special time of the year for Muslims. This is, for many people, the first day of the holy month of Ramadan. So the month of Ramadan, for people who are Muslims, who practice the religion of Islam, it is a month in which it is considered a very spiritual month. It's mostly known for our fasting, meaning abstaining from food, drink, any sexual contact with your partner from sunrise to sunset, or I should say from dawn to sunset. That is what it is most known. But Ramadan is, in fact, a very spiritual time beyond that. So it is a month in which the holy book of the Quran was revealed. So we believe that this is the month that is also called the month of the Quran, meaning it is a month and a special time for Muslims all over to not just to focus on controlling our carnal needs, but as well as a time of spiritual fulfillment. It can be very challenging living in today's time, definitely applicable, but it comes with its own challenges. So today, since mostly every Ramadan, I kind of do a Ramadan one-on-one kind of thing. Instead, I am going to talk today a little bit more about it being really practical tips about how people kind of adjust to being Muslim in America in 2018. And here to have this conversation with me, I'm so excited to welcome Monica McNeil Body. Welcome, Monica.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So I'm going to tell you a little bit about Monica. She is awesome sauce. All right. So let me just say she's awesome sauce. Monica is a public speaker, writer, and owner of Magnify Your Message, a boutique marketing consulting firm serving as the secret sauce. See, I told you she was awesome sauce. To top Muslim online entrepreneurs, as a 20 plus year convert to the religion of Islam and a longtime mentor of new Muslim women, Monica relishes sparking the public conversations Muslims need to better themselves as individuals and community. She finds topics of new Muslim care and mental health awareness too juicy to resist. Monica is the mother of four children and a graduate of Georgetown University School of Foreign Service. You can find her group, Who Am I, Now That I'm Muslim, on Facebook. And Monica has been y'all know that I love Facebook and Facebook is my community. So Monica has been my Facebook friend for a minute. And we have worked together on a couple of projects, and she has been somebody that I follow and have been a part of this group. So I did not convert to Islam. I was born Muslim. But I always admire people who convert to Islam, particularly mm-hmm. in America, because it is a very different lifestyle. It's not just a religion. It's not just, you know, what you believe. It is a very different lifestyle. And it's sort of, I consider it kind of like, I guess the way that I view it as somebody who was born and raised Muslim and also in my fitness profession, it's like a major transformation. And you know how we watch those transformations on like Biggest Loser, like, wow, look at them now. I look at like people who convert to Islam. I'm like, this is really amazing, particularly if you grow up in America. And I don't know, is that silly of me, Monica?
No. It's not silly at all. A lot of my friends who grew up Muslim have told me that when they meet new Muslims, they are often even ashamed of themselves in respect to how they are with their religion, even if they're, you know, practicing and so on. They wonder how it is, like you're saying, that those of us who grew up in other ways of life, like why and how we would even come into their way of life that has particular prescriptions with it and things that we do and specific guidelines that are often at odds with those of the general population. So what you're saying, it's not new. I've heard it before. And I hear you. And I can appreciate what you're saying. And at the same time, we each have our own path into Islam, those of us who come. So Allah finds the way for us. And the way that he found for me was, alhamdulillah, perfect.
I'm sorry, can
you hear me?
I can hear you. I can hear you, but my producer is telling me he's going to fix the sound for the audience. No problem. Hold on.
Okay. Do you think it might help if I go outside, maybe? Right now, I'm inside.
It's not you. It's not you. It's a connection.
It's not me.
Okay. It's not you. Okay. All right. So we're all good, Harry? All right. I think we're good. So one of the things, I know there's a lot of things about being converting to Islam and adopting many of the habits and lifestyles that we have as Muslims, but today we want to talk specifically about Ramadan and talk a little bit about what are some of the practical ways, not just for new Muslims, but for all Muslims, because every year is different. So we know that Ramadan comes on a lunar schedule, which means it is always 10 days earlier every year. When it's 10 days earlier, I think about 4 years ago, we were right smack in the middle of the summer.
Right.
And even as I was been fasting since I was probably about 7, I had never ever experienced a fast that long. And it really did change the way that I experienced the fast, right?
Mm-hmm,
so even people who have been Muslims for years can always use some really practical tips. But I want to ask you from your perspective, what is it like? What was your first Ramadan like?
Okay, so my first Ramadan, I knew nothing beyond the fact that Ramadan was there. It was happening. When I read the verse about waiting until the white thread separates from the black thread to begin your fast, I was so on my own, not connected and unknowledgeable that I literally got a white thread and a black thread. And I woke up early enough in the night to eat. And then I would be on my balcony or by my balcony window waiting to see when I could distinguish the two to understand that my fast needed to begin at that time. I didn't have subhanAllah, I knew nothing. I was on my own. I just really was. So my fast was the fasting of the clueless.
If you woke up in the middle of the night to do that, that must have been a really long fast.
Well, I knew that. Okay, I knew around what time. I knew I couldn't. It wasn't. You know, it doesn't start at sunrise. It starts before sunrise. So I was still waking up when it was. It was tahajjud time. Okay, so it was dawn time, but I was just making sure I was waking dark and I, so that I could catch the time when that distinguishment would happen, the distinguishing would happen. So I would not inadvertently break my fast before it even really began. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that, like, it's my first fast. I was just clueless. And there you go.
What do you think is you, do you think that the start and the ending of the fast is the biggest mistake? What is one of the biggest mistakes that people make when they first start fasting?
Okay, so I think it would be helpful to address this on two levels. There is the practical side in terms of the physical, which I think is what we're leading towards in this conversation. But really, that's affected by what's happening in your mind. And I know for myself, over the years, there have been many times that I haven't been as successful as I could have been with Ramadan because of the mind game in my head with my own doubts about my own self and my feelings about myself that got in the way. I sabotaged myself. So you see, you can have all of the practical tips that you want. And, you know, do this and drink at this much, you know, this amount of water at night and get up at this time and have this for your suhoor, like your pre-dawn meal and so on and so forth. However, you can do all of those things and still mess yourself up because of what's happening in your own mind. So there are the two sides.
So what's the mental games that happen? Is it a confidence, a self-doubt? Is it kind of like this idea? Is it more of the food or is it more of kind of like the spiritual worthiness? What do you think?
I would say both. And when I think about this, it's like there are two sides. There is the shahawat, the doubts, and there's the shubahat, the desire, and then the shubahat, which is the doubts. And desire and doubt are just two aspects of our mind that go with how our minds are created. It's like a double-edged sword. On one side, desire and doubt helped us. Desire helps us to evolve, right? Mm-hmm. And that factors into us as being Khalifa or vicegerents upon the earth and stewards upon the earth. And then at the same time, doubt also helps us to discern and distinguish things. Our minds are made to identify things and their essences and their attributes. So they're positive in that way. But where they can work against us is what's happening inside ourselves. So when it comes to Ramadan, I think that you have the desire, i.e., I'm hungry. I would like to be with my spouse. I want to sleep in instead of offering my salah. You know, I don't really want to engage the Quran unless I understand it fully and know the Arabic. You have your desires, okay, around your achievements and what you can do and what you can have. Then there's the other side of it. The doubt where, like you said, the spiritual worthiness, you know, am I good enough? Who am I trying to be? I mean, literally just yesterday in the twinkling of an eye, I was out there and I'm not speaking. I'm just saying that theoretically, I was out in the club. Ain't nobody thinking about fast. And then who am I trying to be today? You know, so there are both sides. You can get lost in both and psych yourself out, self-sabotage in both, no matter the practical steps you can take for the hydration and the nutrition and the so on of your body.
I think that is so common. I hear this, we hear this a lot, which we try to quell in the Muslim community, and they're memes, right? Right? There's a meme of a guy like smoking and drinking. It's like before Ramadan, and then he's in like thobe and dhikrbees, and it's like during Ramadan, and it's kind of like our tongue-in-cheek way of throwing shade at people. But if that is what it takes in order to bring you closer than your Lord, then hey, that is what Ramadan is meant for, right?
Yes.
So I definitely see that we continue to do that. We really shouldn't, you know, we shouldn't throw that kind of shade. But, you know, that's what Ramadan was meant for. I think that even people who don't go as far as not practicing Islam throughout the year, we all have things that we have to give up and improve during the month of Ramadan to make it really a practical application for our daily lives. Some of the things that I find that is really some of the biggest adjustments is how to adjust your time to fit in a lot of the extra things. So not just time, mm-hmm. as far as our energy, right? So a lot of people will say, yeah. You know, I have less energy, but as I mentioned in the earlier in the show, is that Ramadan is also a time of great worship and recognition of the Quran. Many Muslims try to read the entire Quran during the month of Ramadan, try to make the additional Tarawih prayers. And when you're adding all of this stuff on top of an already busy schedule, then it sometimes can become overwhelming. What are some of the, do you have some suggestions for people who may be struggling with the time issue of in adding all of this additional activities and worship into their already busy schedule?
I think that there's something that applies at all times, no matter what, that we can hold on to. And that is that Allah loves the small deed done consistently.
Mm.
So if you're going to take the Quran, for example, if you're going to take more, all right, well, what if you're in a situation where you really haven't touched the Quran much in a minute, more than a minute? Well, do you know that taking an ayah or taking a section, taking a few verses, if you will, each day, even 5 minutes worth, consistently through Ramadan and hopefully beyond, it's going to be more and better for you than trying to go fast and furious covering a 30th of the Quran, and, you know, managing to do that in your first 5, maybe 7 days before falling off in the middle of Ramadan and never really picking yourself back up. How about we approach this in a way that is sane? Okay, that takes into account the reality of your situation. You don't have to read the whole Quran during Ramadan. If you can, that's great. If you can go to all of the Tarawih prayers, which is the special night prayer that we do specifically during Ramadan, and over the course of that month, you will have heard the whole Quran recited. Okay, if you can do that, great. But most of us can't. Most of us just cannot. We do not have lives that can bear that, nor do we even normally have even a fraction of the intention, of the desire, of the ability to do that in our regular lives outside of Ramadan. So let's take small increments, just make an improvement and hold that improvement through Ramadan. Try that. Mm-hmm. So that's what I would actually suggest. I used to do the whole read the whole Quran in the whole month of Ramadan. I remember the first year I really pushed to do this. By this time, I had, I have 4 children now. So my eldest, and she has significant special needs. And then I had my eldest son, and I had my middle son, who's now my middle son. He was the baby. So he was a newborn. And here I was pushing to read this third of the Quran each day. It was insane. And then on top of that, this is just me being me. By that point, I had enough Arabic that honestly, and enough Quranic Arabic, no less, where reading English was kind of cheating. Okay. So me being me, I was pushing myself even harder. Like, no, you know what? Look, okay, we can wean, girl, wean yourself. Be better during Ramadan. You can do this. So how much more weight did I put on myself? Here I am, the mom of 3 young children, and, you know, tasking myself with reading this Quran specifically in the Fusha, in the classical Arabic itself. and just really wearing myself out. I did make it through that Ramadan with the Quran. I did do it, but I'm gonna tell you what, I never went back to doing that mess again. I just didn't, truly.
I think that one of the mercies is that it is a sunnah, that it is not, it doesn't violate your fast or your Ramadan if you aren't able to do it. But if you are able to do it, then it's something that you can certainly garner those additional blessings. This is the other one of the mercies of Ramadan itself, is that everything that you do, it is multiplied. So yes, even if, like you said, you read 5 minutes, then it is multiplied by 100 than if you did it outside of Ramadan. So this is also in my mind, I don't know if the word justification is a proper term, one of the justifications of, even if you can't do it the rest of the year, try to do it in Ramadan.
Yeah. Ramadan is a leverage. It's
like, so not it's just a for Quran, but just for everything.
Yeah, for anything and everything that you do, because good is good. So even if it's smiling at the people, I mean, this is a good thing. You know, even if it's removing something out of someone's way, you know, even if, you know, so the things that we already had as examples of charity and good treatment of other people, it's multiplied during that time, just like you said. So why not? Go for it.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to WNHHLP 103.5 FM, New Haven's home for community radio. This is Mornings with Mubaraka, and I'm Mubaraka Ibrahim. We are broadcasting live from downtown New Haven and streaming live on TuneIn Radio and newhavenindependent.org. You can also find us streaming on New Haven Independent Facebook page, as well as the Fit Muslima Facebook page. We are talking to Monica Manil Badi, and we are talking about practical tips of not just surviving, but thriving during the month of Ramadan. It is the Muslim holy month of Ramadan. And we are talking really from a practical point of view about what it's like for Muslims, both born Muslims and people who convert to Islam, to experience Ramadan in America in 2018. Let's talk a little bit about kind of like the interaction that we have with people on a daily basis. I know for myself, during Ramadan, I guess the biggest challenge that I have is when I'm having meetings and people are like, oh, let's grab some coffee. Normally I'll be like, yeah, okay, and get to the coffee shop and like, oh, I'm fasting, right? And so how do you suggest people kind of like, now, particularly people who this may be their first Ramadan, right? How do they navigate kind of this, the world of questions from people who are not Muslim about Ramadan?
Okay, well, let's take some questions that we might get. Oh, so what is Ramadan? Like, how would you answer that? Now, most people focus on the fasting aspect. You know, Ramadan is a lunar month in which we fast from dawn until sunset, blah, blah, blah. And yes, it is. Of course, we're not denying that. But that's not even how Allah actually defines what Ramadan is. That A equals B equation that he gives is that Ramadan is the month in which was revealed the Quran. That is the significance of Ramadan. Now, to make this real upon, you know, for us, like there is something in the Quran for us that we tap into even more when we're fasting. We follow that command to fast, you know, that he says to fast, so we fast. But Ramadan is the time of the focus on the Quran. As part of that focus, we take that command to fast, and we do it in a way that it's different than other communities, and just in regular nutrition, I guess we would call it intermittent fasting, if you want to get a technical about it. But there you go. You know, like, start with the definition that Allah himself gives, instead of always relying on essentially saying it's a time that I'm depriving myself of everything. And by doing this, we can feel like the poor who don't have anything, all of which is true. But that's not what Ramadan is. That's just what we do within it.
Right. I always found that actually reasoning very interesting, because actually I've never heard that ever mentioned in the Quran or the Hadith, like like as the purpose of Ramadan. I'm like, where do we actually get that from? Like, who came up with that?
Yeah. Well, see, the thing is, I mean, alhamdulillah, I mean, we're thinking about our faith, right? And we see wisdoms in it. And the thing is, just like in common parlance and how we talk, we state the wisdoms as in, you know, we can feel what the poor are feeling like, and we can, so we state these wisdoms as if those are the statements that we find in our book. And I don't think we realize that we're talking like that. So that's not true. Something that's specifically said in the book, but it is a wisdom that we, as those who are experiencing it, find to be true.
Do you find that people are shy to say, so you deal with a lot of new converts to Islam, are people shy to say that they are fasting? Or because I would be honest, even as somebody who's been Muslim all my life, even and now in the business world, sometimes I just kind of like avoid it. I just want to have the meeting and talk about the meeting. I don't want to spend the first 10 minutes talking about Ramadan and my religion. I just want to know if we're going to do the contract, right?
So, well, the thing is, look, fasting is for Allah. This is between you and Allah. Nobody knows 100% if you're fasting or not, no matter what you say. It's for you and Allah. So go make your paper. Go to school and get your education. Go live your life and do your thing. And in the meanwhile, while you're going and doing your daily grind, know that you're having this special connection with Allah. Protect that. It doesn't have to be something you wear on your sleeve. Now, if it benefits you, if it helps you to talk about it, if you want to open the opportunity for people to ask questions because you want to give da'wah, like you want to give the information about Islam, and it's better that they get it from you than from Fox News or wherever, then okay, great. There's nothing wrong with it either way. I, for myself, look, what I'm doing is my business. Period, point blank, full stop. I don't mind talking about it. I'll mention it maybe. And if somebody asks a question, fine. But I don't make it an issue. And I think as converts now, we go through a phase. Like the early phase, I call it convertitis. Okay. It's where, you know, it's, they're like a constellation of behaviors. You know, you read one book and then all of a sudden you're an expert, right? You have the answers, right? Some people fall into the holier than thou, right? As if, you know, a woman, she's, you know, lily white pure, whereas maybe only 2 weeks ago, it was something quite opposite. You have those who are, because their lives were so out of control before, they become actually rigid within whatever it is that they do know of their religion. You have those who are Muslim for years, and who don't have a sense that, you know, really Islam is like a circle, right? And the circle itself is like the boundaries, the hudud, like you don't want to approach the boundaries, but within you have a whole shade of gray. And and you know what I'm saying? So there is a specific set of like mindsets and ways that people have when they're converts. And there are some who are riding a religious high who do need to go forth and charge and inform the world that yes, it's Ramadan. Yes, I'm fasting. And make a big deal of it. And you know what? More power to you. Do your thing. And then there are those who just keep it completely secret. And, you know, it's not something that they make a big deal of. If they get offered some food, thanks. That's really kind of you, but I'm good. And they keep it moving. It's okay. No matter which way you fall.
That's a really good point. I think that it's not talked about enough that you don't have to talk about it. But, you know, for some people, for sometimes, and I have to say this as a asterisk to my previous statement, mm-hmm. in a country where Islam is certainly the most misunderstood religion, mm-hmm. that it is always beneficial to be open to answer questions. Because, mm-hmm. like you said, it's better that people hear it from actual Muslims than hear it from someone who's not Muslim, who really don't know what they're talking about, trying to explain Islam.
Want to hear it from us. And as and for women who are covering, you are the beacon, you are the sign. So you become a person, especially if they see you day in, day out. For example, maybe your kids go to the same school. Maybe you all are all sweating outside waiting for your kids to get out of school so you can walk them home. Maybe you run into the grocery store all the time and you both buy, same brand of cookies, whatever it is. If there's some kind of familiarity that they have with you, then they're more likely to ask the question. And I have found that it's often prefaced with, but I don't want to disrespect you, but I have this question, or I don't want to be rude. I don't want to be rude, but I was wondering. Mm. See, so they've seen you enough to know that you're like normal or look normal, and you seem approachable. You seem nice, and so they're here we go. Sorry. Okay, and so they're thinking, okay, I can. This is my chance because you might be the only Muslim person that they've even halfway met in their entire lives, never mind spoken to.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. When we talk, that was a really good segue that I do want to get into about bringing our kids into this mm-hmm. Journey of, I too have four kids and they're all older now. I think that when they were younger, I went through extra effort to make sure that the school knew, that their teachers knew, that everybody knew, so that they would not feel, completely like somebody in the school understood what they were going through, even though so they wouldn't feel completely different. How did you, did your children attend a public school or were...
Yes.
And how did you navigate that for them when they were younger or help them navigate the fast during Ramadan?
Okay. So when they were younger, I first strived to, with them, focusing more on the weekends, to tell you the truth, when they were at an age where it wasn't incumbent upon them and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. And of course, still after, but what I'm saying, to at least introduce them to that idea for themselves, to take it on, just to try it out. Mm-hmm. That's how I would do it. And then during the week, what I pointed out to them was actually they were already fasting much of the school day. They just weren't mm-hmm. really thinking about it. They were already doing it because lunch came at a certain time. Mm-hmm. And it's not like they could be excused from class to run to get water all the time at the water fountain. Not like they were even thinking about it. So when they recognized that, they naturally did this, and in fact, they did it every night while they were sleeping. Mm. When they realized it was already part of their lives, then that helped to ease some of the mind. I will say that the parents being together, both on board, about the approach, definitely makes a difference. Okay. Mm-hmm. So if you have one parent who is striving and you have another who isn't for one reason or another, then what that does is it creates a dynamic where the children, they're seeing one thing, they're seeing the other. And so that gives them wiggle room, to not want to, even more or not do, because it's either mom or dad who mm-hmm. isn't following through. As parents, sometimes we fall into the do as I say, not as I do, but that does not work with kids. You have to be living it yourself. So I would say that first and foremost, that is the first part of helping them, whether it's in public school, Islamic school, homeschool that you as a parent, that you're walking that and they actually see that. You know, when a child sees it modeled in front of them, they know it is possible. The same way, for example, if you came from a family of doctors, would you ever doubt that you could become a doctor?
Right.
It's so much a part of your consciousness and part of the family culture. You don't doubt. Now, whether you will or won't, it's another issue, but you don't doubt it.
Right. Right.
So you want to have that model first. And then, like I said, appealing to reason that does that can work for their age. What you mentioned as far as making sure that their teachers, and it's really big, it's really important to have the teachers on board to be part of the crew that is supporting them and what they and what they're doing. And then also making sure that when you do have them 100% in the evening, you know, that you're really living this Ramadan with them. The other thing too that might help is if you have an opportunity as a parent to go to your child's school and do a presentation either for their class or if there is a greater opportunity for the school to do, to actually represent and make it easier for your child to claim their identity in that place. Because now you've shown up and you've opened the awareness. So it's not so, while it may still be different, it's not unknown weird anymore. It's just, oh, it's different than what we do.
Right.
That type of thing.
Right. And also one of the things that I would that I'd add to that is pointing out to kids that it is not weird, like you said, it's different because every faith has a form of fasting, particularly the three Abrahamic faiths, even Buddhism and Hinduism and Taoism, they all have a form of fasting at some point. So it's not like this foreign thing that no one has ever heard of. And often that can help them be able to relate to their friends. Our form, I believe, is the strictest, but everybody has their own form.
Everyone has their own form. And the wonderful way to even make that point is by going right to the verse in Surah Al-Baqarah, where Allah, you know, he prescribes the fasting upon us, just as those before us, you know, have been prescribed the fasting. So it's not new. It's not new. And guess what? Humankind has survived. We can do it. We can make it. We can do this.
And there's lots of benefits to it, not just physical benefits, but spiritual benefits as well. The ability to be able to restrain yourself, that type of self-control, and in the most carnal way, like it's food, right?
But there's something.
We fast all the time. We fast while we're sleeping. If you wake up late for work or for school and you skip breakfast, you're still fasting, right?
Yes.
So we do it all the time.
There's something even more to that, beyond the self-restraint. I was thinking about this, and this is something, inshallah, I'll be speaking about on Friday night at the Women's Mosque of America. So it is this point, and that is, if you go back to the story of our parents, humanity's parents, Prophet Adam alayhi salam and his wife, they were created. We know they were created for the earth as a khalifa. They had a role that they were going to fulfill, and educated them with the names and attributes and essence of things. And then Allah educated them on the reality of their own nafs and their own soul through testing them. Okay, with telling them not to approach this tree. And they had to deal with, well, how did they, quote unquote, fall? It was the desire to live forever. And it was the doubt about how long they would live. And that comes through specifically what Satan said to them in order to make them eat of the tree. And we get, what he said, about approaching this tree of eternity so that you can become angels and stuff like that. Okay, we get that from the 7th chapter and the 20th. So we know this. But then when they were upon the earth, Adam came upon words of his Lord. And what he learned or what he was told was that whoever takes this guidance, when Allah sends the guidance, whoever takes this guidance on them shall be no fear, nor shall they grieve. Now, let's think about what is really being said here. And that is the purpose of the revelation. What is the payoff of the revelation of taking the guidance? The payoff is an emotional stability. Like I said, we are beings who are created such that doubt and desire, that is innate in who and how we are. It has a positive application. It has a negative application. And that point of revelation is to give us that emotional stability as we're dealing with the more negative side. So when we're in Ramadan, and this is the month of the Quran, this is a month of revelation, what is the payoff, my friends? It's beyond the self-restraint. It is the opportunity to look at yourself, your doubts, your desires, come into the knowledge of self, come into the now, not about tomorrow, what you're fearing and these anxieties, not about grief, about the stuff that passed that you, it's gone now, it's done. It's about right now, securing your happiness right now. This is the opportunity of the Quran. And so, and I think this is a point that people miss all the time, because again, we're caught up on, we're not fasting, we're not drinking, we're not having intimate relations, we're this and we're that and the other, and we're having to restrain ourselves. That's the present upfront reality. And then there's something else behind that. There's a potential behind that. So, and it's strengthened during Ramadan.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to WNHHLP 103.5 FM, New Haven's home for community radio. I'm Mubaraka Ibrahim, and this is Mornings with Mubaraka, where we talk about national issues from a local level through a lens of diversity. We're streaming live from downtown New Haven and on TuneIn Radio, as well as newhavenindependent.org. If you are just tuning in, we are talking about practical tips for not just surviving, but thriving in Ramadan, the holy month of fasting for Muslims, with Monica McNeil Body. We are about 5 minutes out, and so we want to end the show with really some pearls of wisdom that you have for people who are, let's start off for people who this may be their first Ramadan. What are some of the most important things that people need to keep in mind or do during this month?
The most important thing, and I would say for the one who is starting out, and this still applies to those who have been fasting with their families since, you know, they, you know, learned about how to fast, and that is to be amongst the Muslims. Find at least a Muslim friend. You know, many of us are just kind of out here spinning off on our own. Find a companion who is also fasting so that there is a togetherness. And this is really important, because many of us, especially, you know, if you've converted, guess what? We don't have Christmas anymore. We don't have Easter anymore. We don't have these things that actually we may still have feelings for. And here we are doing something that's supposed to be so grand and so good and so all of that, which not counteracting any of that, but the emotions of it, it's just kind of like, okay, I'm supposed to fast. And I stand in prayer and don't even, you know, in the masjid at night for tarawih prayers, and I don't even know what's going on. And, you know, you're just lost and clueless if you are by yourself. And I say this as someone who most definitely was lost and clueless her first few Ramadans. It was just the first one. So yes, make sure that you find a companion. When you are with someone who's more established in a practice of your convert or with a Muslim family, then, you know, there come invitations. Come over for iftar. Come pray with us. What are you doing here? So it feels a social component that that is important. You need to know that Islam is actually kind of fun. It's not like all drab. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, it's not all drab. It's not all drab, people. I promise you. And so you really need to see that. But if you're by yourself, you don't. How are you going to know that? So it's really important, if you're new in the deen, early on in the deen, or you don't have many Muslims around you, to find someone to be with and to connect with on a daily basis. And so there are many benefits that come with that. If you have a problem getting up for Fajr, the first prayer of the day, never mind for the pre-dawn meal, you know, have a phone tree, you know, with your friends, where you call each other. Someone takes the responsibility for the week to call the other ones. Hey, you up, girl? Yeah, girl, you know, you need to make this happen, you know, to do that and encourage each other. So all of that comes with being with other Muslims. And you would be surprised how many of us are unmasked if you've been in the community for a while, as well as just not connected because you're new. Go forth and find a friend.
Mm-hmm. How do you think that we could best support those of us who have been Muslim for a while, best support people who are just, this may be their first Ramadan or first experience fasting?
Yeah, so one thing that would be very easy to do would be to find a new Muslim group around you, maybe your local masjid or mosque would know about one, or even host one. Maybe there's a sisters group where there are new Muslim women, for example, for the women, and brothers, men for the brothers. And to actually, you know, befriend, like, you all show up too and befriend somebody and invite somebody, because see, it's so normal for you guys. This is just your life. You know, this is like the Christmas holidays for y'all in a way, like y'all come together, right? You're going to have iftar. You're going to, you know, go for Eid. You have your family traditions that are specific to you. Never mind the general format of the fast and the general format of Eid, you know, the celebration after Ramadan ends. Well, guess what? The new Muslims don't have that. How about you kind of look beyond yourself and find somebody, adopt a new Muslim, adopt a new friend. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, call them up and be like, hey, you know, it's, you know, hey, wake up. You know, it's time for, be great for your, you know, the pre-fast, you know, the dawn meal, so that your fast can be easier in the day. Hey, are you up for Salatul Fajr? Hey, you know, it's almost time to break your fast. You know, don't delay. You know, once we hear that call for prayer, you can break your fast right then and there. Hey, you know, like, befriend somebody. You all isolate as well.
That's okay. That's a really, really good point. I want to thank you I want to thank you so much. This was a really fun conversation.
Thank you.
Just before you go, can you give our listeners a way that they can get in touch with you? Is your Facebook group, is it open to everyone? Can you just give us a little how to get in touch with you?
Okay, so you can't go, who am I now that I'm Muslim? And you can just, you know, do that in search in Facebook. And it'll come up, and so you can ask to join in. Another thing you can do is you can message me, and I'll at least take a look at the message and see if I'll respond. I get, you know, how brothers and peoples and whatever do on Facebook. So I do screen that. I don't friend everybody. However, if you do drop me a message, hey, I heard you on Mubarakah's show, you know, can we connect, or I have a question or da da da, then fine. By all means, I will respond, inshallah.
Okay, thank you so much. If you are just tuning in, this was Mornings with Mubarakah, and we just talked to Monica McNeil-Body about surviving, not just surviving, but thriving this month of Ramadan. So I want to thank you, Monica, for joining the show. I want to thank everybody.
Well, thank you for inviting me. I'm honored. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. So I want to thank everybody for listening, and I want to wish everyone out there a happy Ramadan, and remind you once again to be a voice and not an echo.